This is Andy.
And this is Matt.
And you're listening to
The Hop Podcast with No Name.
What a dumb name.
It's so stupid. So let's begin. This is how we're going to start today. I think first we have to apologize.
For what?
Because we're not in our super high-end luxury podcast studio.
Your basement?
Yep. We're in the, which has no soundproofing.
No, either. Nothing. It's just your basement.
Just also a different room that we're usually in. And today we're at your house and there's some...
Ambient noise.
So it gets picked up. I'm sorry.
You should blame apologize. Andy. Direct.
Just blame Andy. It is absolutely
my scheduling difficulty as to why we're doing this. So yeah, it is 100%.
So thanks.
You're welcome.
Yeah. Way to let everyone down.
Perfect. Good.
That's how we start episode 29.
I'm ready.
Which we had, this episode is coming immediately after.
Yes.
A conversation we just had where we like, yep, that seems like a good idea to talk about. So let's talk about it.
And we had a really, really good question.
Yeah.
That we want to address because it's a question that I feel like is not unique to this one person or this one organization. And it's a variation of a question that we've heard a lot of before.
Yeah. And I think we've done a couple episodes recently about, you know, sort of the case for HOP, which I've been calling them, which is saying, here's a common pushback that we get. And here's maybe a way to combat that pushback or at least, you know, ask for reasons why you should still operation learn or follow a HOP thought. And this is not necessarily directly tied to that in the sense of like this overarching leadership pushback. It's just something that happens very often when we're doing operational learning and how we respond to it.
Absolutely. Yeah. So the question was like, what happens if we've done operational learning, right? And so we've learned from folks and there was sort of a specific example. I don't know how actually specific it was or if it was just like a generalization of a problem that these folks have had before. But think about it from, in this lens, we'll talk about it from a quality space instead of from a safety space of,
Look at us.
Outside of safety. I'm so proud of us. So in order for a specific product to be made, there's a sequencing of valves that have to be opened and shut specifically. And if you miss opening one or miss shutting one at a specific time, you can actually have a quality defect for the product and you scrap a batch of product. And so the question was, let's say you went and you operationally learned about this and you learned like kind of how difficult it is to get it right and that it's error prone and you can easily mix things up. And so it's not really a surprise that this type of quality concern can happen or is happening. Makes perfect sense as to why it's happening. And the solution set that's thrown out there is, we need to automate it, right? So if we automated the opening and the closing of the valves, well, then the problem would go away.
And this solution set was sort of, it was asked in the lens of, hey, we did operational learning.
Mm-hmm.
We met with people who would be doing this task. We had some great problem statements and we're at the tri-storming phase and this is the idea they think would be best.
Yeah.
Right, that's where we got to.
Let's take that idea of like, actually this solution would fix a lot of the problems, right? If it was automated. And then in bringing that solution to a leadership team, the answer was no.
and more specifically, no, because it's too expensive.
Yeah, no, because it's too expensive for a lot of different reasons, right? It's not just about the automation piece of it, but then there's also regulatory requirements. And then there's also, you know, the actual recipe that you'd be using to make this product, that would have to change. So like the implications of automating it were far greater than maybe the team understood at the time, or maybe understood. And they were just like, hey, we should do it anyway. And so the answer was no, we can't.
Which now hearing you say that, I'm realizing that you tell a story. This is very similar, where you had a solution to something, and maybe you were aware and didn't see how big it went, but it was, No, because if we change that, we have to go through the regulators and get approved again, and it's going to delay production, and it's millions and millions of dollars, not just as simple as you think it is, Andy.
Right. So yeah, so this was actually, this question is quite near and dear to my heart, because I lived
through... That's why you were crying for like 10 minutes during the conversation. Okay, I got it. Yeah.
Because I have lived through this before, right? Where I went and I, you know, thought I understood the problem that we were trying to face, and I went to go get approval for an engineering solution, and I was just very bluntly told, no, it's cost prohibitive. There's absolutely no way we can do that because it's got all these other ties. And that feels just deflating, like ultimately defeated. You went and you did all of this learning and you have a great solution, or it feels like a great solution, and then you're just shot down. And so they wanted to know, what do you do? Like, what do you do in that circumstance?
Let's not jump too far ahead, because okay. This idea of shot down, we've spent time in other episodes talking about how operational learning can empower those doing the work to be involved in the solutions.
Yeah.
So yeah, hey, by the way, there's going to be some times, which you may know this already, where you do all the work to do operational learning. You run a great learning team or whatever your method is. And at the end, it's still, sorry, too bad. But there's other ways.
Yeah. So having experienced this myself, the first, I think, is the picking yourself back up by your bootstraps, right? Because especially if you kind of think that it's a really good solution, it's painful. But one of the ways that we make sure to sort of help ourselves with it is going back to the problem statement, right? And so oftentimes, if we have a really big solution to something, like a financially large solution, sometimes the reason why automation feels like the answer is because it's solving a lot of smaller problems. And so if we can remember that and go back to some of the smaller problems, then we have an opportunity to come up and brainstorm a different level of solution. So for example, if automation in this case, like you looked at it and you're like, okay, well that would fix when we're doing batch A, it's really hard to remember to close valve C right at the time where, you know, this is titrated to this level. I'm making stuff up, right? But it's
everyone
does. That's not a surprise. right? Like there's a specific place where the likelihood of making an error is higher, or where it doesn't feel like you have to spend a lot of time paying attention to a specific valve, because we've never had a problem with that valve before. And then every once in a while we do, right? So there are smaller problem statements, like very discrete things that people are dealing with that lead and sort of, we almost like push them together in one big ball of a problem. And then we say, well, automation would fix all of that. Right. And then if that automation gets shot down, then our mission would be to go back to the smaller problems that we're trying to address and see if we can pick those apart and say, okay, if we can't, let's put that in as a constraint. Like we can't automate it. Now knowing that, what can we do? So if we can define it as, hey, it's difficult to remember to close valve C at specific operation Q, whatever, then we start
to look
at...
I feel like I'm there. Wow.
I'm painting this picture so beautifully, right?
We have this tapestry.
So then maybe we take a look at that tiny piece and brainstorm some ways to draw your attention, right? To have an attention activator at that point in time, or to make small process changes so that you don't have as many interactions as you had before. So still working towards making improvements, but looking at it from a smaller problem statement perspective, right? So that's kind of option one. Go back to the drawing board, look at our problems, see which of those that led to this big solution we can sort of pick apart and make small progress towards them, knowing that we are operating under the constraint of not being able to automate everything. So that's option A, which I would always suggest going down, by the way.
So in this case, option A is the best option.
Well, there is an option B.
Oh.
Yes.
Oh, gosh.
Are you concerned about option B?
Yeah, no idea.
No idea where this is going. So option A, at some point you might reach like a law of diminishing returns, meaning like you've made small process improvements and the quality return on your product, right? It's like, okay, it's helped us a little bit, but we're still having quality defects happening, you know, X amount of time. And And really, we're out of ideas on how to do this without automation. Like, we're not sure that there's a better way unless we do a rehaul of this system or an overhaul of this system.
So would you say that, I'm going to use ridiculous numbers, but if we were
I'm so ready.
If we were historically scrapping one in every 10 batches,
somethings,
maybe yeah. we've made small tweaks and we're scrapping one in every 15 batches, but from our view as the worker and from leadership's view, that's still too often.
Right, right. So we would be frustrated as a leadership team that we're still having this many defects or this yeah. many quality problems, or you know, however we're labeling this process that may or may not exist somewhere, right?
Allegedly.
This generalized process. Right. So this is the place where we can adopt a HOP mindset, even if it doesn't really feel like we're taking a ton of action, because at some point in time, you might just decide as an organization, if we're talking about something quality or operations or product wise, that financially it just doesn't make sense to invest in the process improvement, whatever that is. And the key to being able to make that decision is looking at your current state and being like, if we continue to have these quality defects happening at this rate, that's the other half of that financial equation of like, okay, we can stomach the fact that, you know, one out of every, what did you say? 15 batches, right? We're going to have a potential problem with it.
And that costs us
whatever.
$25,000.
I love how arbitrary these numbers are. Sure. It's no, probably more than that, but yeah.
$25 billion.
It's right. It can be expensive depending on what it is. Right. But it has some sort of financial means to it, right? That's where you get your return on investment. That's where mm-hmm. all that math comes from. And it's really important to do. The HOP piece of this puzzle is that in the meantime, while we're making all of those decisions, or when we've decided we aren't going to invest in the technology upgrade, that doesn't mean we get to beat up on the employees that aren't perfect. Meaning we still have to recognize that people are going to make mistakes, and that we're like, at best, we're like 2 or 3 sigma, right? So if this process is confusing.
Can you explain what you mean by that? Because you say it all the time in passing.
Yeah.
And I'm sure most people listening to this are like, yep, I know what that means. But let's just say you didn't. From a world that did 6 sigma or lean.
Yeah. I don't know the numbers offhand and I should look them up. But so it's the number of defects you make per action, right? Like meaning like how good are we at doing the same thing over and over again without making a mistake, right? With being able to.
I am way worse.
And so it equates to an error rate. And I'm sure somebody who's listening like knows the numbers off the top of their head and like, Andrea, it's an error rate of like 1 out of every 10,000 actions you take, you make a mistake. But when we look at error numbers that have been researched, right, whether somebody's new to something or they've been doing it over and over again, sort of the best case scenario that we found is that 1 out of every 10,000 times we do something, we make a mistake, right? We mess it up.
It's being human,
yeah. Right?
And you were saying you can't beat up on people for being human.
Correct. So if we decide we're not going to invest in the technology and we recognize that as our process exists today, it requires somebody to always get something right all the time. And if they mess it up, we've scrapped something. We don't get to not invest in the technology and then also beat up on people who are just being human.
Yeah.
Like that's not a fair placement for our frustration. We made a decision. We're not going to spend money on it. Fine. Made a decision. But that means that when we do have batch defects or we have quality issues around it, we also don't get to go and wish that our people were superhuman, right? And like wish that people suddenly could operate with the absolute perfection that we're looking for in terms of an automated system. Period. We kind of just don't get to do that.
Yeah, because you can see that in the original conversation, which is, hey, we want to automate this whole system.
Yeah.
And someone hearing like, I want to spend millions of dollars so people don't have to do their jobs.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Right? That could be the narrative that people write right? up. Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I've absolutely done that before in my last role where, you know, we had a tool in place that you could go out and find new companies or new people to reach out to. And there was new shiny tools that would do it automatically for you. And everyone that worked with me wanted those tools because why wouldn't you? And I was like, no, part of doing your job is
do this properly.
Miserable part. And that's how you earn your stripes. And so you can see it being on the other way, which is like, wait, you want me to spend millions of dollars because people can't turn a dang valve when they have to? That seems nuts.
Yeah. Yeah. And so that's, I mean, that's kind of this, that's the sort of the emotional trade-off that we make, because you still, like, as a leadership team, obviously, right, we're judged on output of things, right? We're judged on making sure that we don't have quality issues. And so it feels like if people could just do it right, all of these problems would go away. And no, I don't have it in my budget to spend this much money to make it so that you don't have to do your job. You have to do your job and you have to do it right. That's why we hired you. We paid you to get the order of these valves right. We paid you to do it. And when that's our emotional feeling, what we end up doing is what most of us have done in many organizations. We don't invest in the technology, and then we end up writing up the end user for making mistakes.
Yeah, you don't get to have your cake and eat it too. You don't get to say, I'm refusing to make any investment into changing what has to happen.
Yeah.
And then say...
And then also let it roll downhill for the last person that touches it.
So because I'm not going to do that, people need to be better. And if they're not better, then they're in trouble.
Yeah. And I think a little bit maybe of a less emotional lens that we can use to look at it is just the understanding of error rate and human fallibility, right? So when we're looking at anything, of recognizing that we're amazing at adapting, but we're not super great. Like humans, we're not super great at doing the same thing over and over and over again. And so if we can look at that from a few different perspectives, then the answer to this question of like, well, what do you do when you do operational learning, right? And you come up with this great solution and it would fix a bunch of the problems. And then you get told that we financially can't do it. Well, you kind of have two options. One is that you go back to looking at the problem statements, you pick them apart, you try to find something smaller, pieces of the puzzle that are leading to this bigger problem that can allow you to reduce the probability of a part of it not going to plan, right? Of whatever I said before, valve C.
Mm-hmm. That's what you said, yeah.
Nice. And so that's option one. And then you're going to have a lot of small solutions, right?
Just to piggyback on that,
yeah.
You go back to the team that you operation learned with and you brainstorm solutions with them.
Right. Or other folks that are doing.
Yeah. You're not going like, okay, leadership team, let's figure it out together. We did that part where they feel better because we learned from them. Now let's go back to the real closet where decisions are made.
No, we go back with the constraint. We're like, well, we can't automate it. So show me the most difficult places. Show me the places where we tend to have the bigger. And then right from a lean perspective, this is when you're Paretoing things, right? This is when you're taking, like, you're looking at your process as, with a, like a ability to look at a lens of problems that you can see that there's multiple and some of them pop up more than others. And we want to make sure that we're addressing the ones that have the largest impact on the final product that we can, right? So you Pareto all that out. That's option one. Do that anyway, or option A. And then option B is when you get to a certain point that you're like, this is probably as good as we know how to make it happen without a technology leap. Fine. Do the math. Do the math and make sure that whatever the output of your process is making sense. And if the ROI doesn't make sense, okay, we've made that decision. And that's a decision that leaders have to make. And it's a hard one to make sometimes.
Very.
But if we do make it, we also don't get to go beat up on the people that aren't being perfect.
Yep. We can't vilify humans for being human.
Yeah.
Which actually just happened. So if at any point in listening to this, you hear the sounds of what could be a leaf blower, I just want you all to know that historically, I would have been furious.
At the leaf blowy.
But don't they know that we are recording a podcast
with the blinds closed
that no one can see us? How do they not know? But now, after 29 episodes and 2+ years of doing this stuff, I didn't get that mad at them.
I love it. All right. So here's the homework. People have asked for homework, so we got to bring the homework back. The homework is, let's go find a place in our organization that we are frustrated with people. And let's do it from the quality lens, right? If you can, right? We're frustrated with people for not always catching something, right? Or always doing a process in the right order. And specifically, we're going to look at this from the lens of error. So we talked a lot on this podcast about mistakes, meaning somebody intentionally doesn't do something to plan because they're adapting in the moment and it makes sense to them. But let's look at it from the lens of error in this case. Like I missed it. Like I meant to do it and I didn't, or it's really complicated for me to understand. And so like sometimes when I try to get this order right, I don't do it well. And let's look at that space and see if you can find it by the places where we are most frustrated. Meaning at this point in time, because of how we're sort of treating problems, that's the place in which we're using a lot of disciplinary action, or we're writing people up, or we're retraining them a lot. So go see whether you can do anything about it or not. It depends upon where you are in the organization. But go see if you can find one of those places where we've kind of let everything roll downhill and we're just frustrated with the end user and we're retraining them or pushing them to do something better than they are today. And we're probably at a law of diminishing returns in terms of like our human's ability to do it repeatedly. And take a look at that space. See if you can find it in your organization.
We used to have a tool that would allow for virtual signing of documents.
Mm.
When we had a new client come on and they would sign our contract, and I would countersign it. So they would, each team gets a copy and it's great. When newer salespeople would start using it, even experienced salespeople, they'd be so excited about getting a new client. They wouldn't use the template correctly. So they wouldn't be a date field to fill out, which means that the contract's not actually valid. And so we'd always be like, and we were so frustrated, right?
It sure, could
be the end of the month. And then, you know, you have a client, it's the last
That's
day of
like
the month.
A big consequence for right? a small error. Yeah.
And you as a business, we couldn't count our revenue for the month against our goal if we didn't have everything filled out. And then we learned that we could just create a template that automatically added the date field as soon as someone uploaded anything.
Perfect.
And it was the easiest solution. That was my example. Yeah, did the homework already?
Yeah, done. That was real quick.
All right, so we'll catch you next time.
Sounds
Thanks
good.
For listening.
Well, that's it.
Yep, another one in the books. We did it.
If you want to send us any of your thoughts, actually fling us any of your thoughts, you can do so at the website www.hoppodcast.com.
That's hoppodcast.com.
It's still such a stupid name.
We look forward to hearing from you. Thanks for listening.